More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next at 9, it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, Fight the Empire host Parafagering looks at America at 243 years old. At 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show. And at 11, on Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews author Ted Chiang about his new book of science fiction stories titled Exhalation. At 11:30, Black Book Talk talks to Lua Ubunifu, the author of Caged and Locked Up, My Personal Experience with Circumstantial Depression. Then from noon to 10 p.m., it's our live remote broadcast from the Waterfront Blues Festival. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
KBOO Portland. This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know here on live radio. Live radio blasting out of our transmitter on the West Hills, knocking aside all the zombie transmitted from somewhere else by machine radios. This is live radio, KBOO. And a shout out. Today is a very important day, yes indeed, because it is Sonia Batrell's first birthday. Happy birthday, Sonia. Yes indeed, it's the 4th of July when a vicious clot of slave mongers trying to escape paying taxes and worried about the fact, the unassailable fact, that Great Britain had ended slavery in 1833, more than two generations previous. Desperate these slave mongers were to maintain their horrific dungeon on torture and slavery, instituted a Declaration of Independence, which they stole certain high-minded participatory ideas from the Iroquois Confederation. It is on this day that we white people lower our heads in shame at the memory of July 4th, 1776, and we swear on our grandmother's graves that we will pull down and abolish the imperial monstrosity that has swelled like a suppurating tumor on this earth for 240-odd years, now threatening the very existence of life on this beautiful blue planet with global climate disaster and or with nuclear obliteration. Yes, 73 years ago, our four monsters brought forth on this continent a new nation conceived in bondage and dedicated to the proposition that all rich white men are going to get away with ruling everyone else. Now we are engaged in a great anti-capitalist and anti-imperial war, testing whether the hegemony of billionaires and useful idiots can continue to ruin everything. But we the people are going to win. Call in with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. That's the number of live radio, 503 in Cascadia, 231-8187. From Radio Havana, Cuba, Russia takes serious issue with Israeli military aggression against Syria, a day after Israeli strikes claimed four lives in the Arab country. On Tuesday, the Russian Foreign Ministry said Russia was concerned about the aerial attacks launched by the occupying regime against Syria. Moscow believes that the assaults could pose a threat to regional stability, the statement added. Israeli warplanes fired missiles at areas inside Damascus and the city's countryside, as well as the western province of Homs, from the Lebanese airspace, according to Syria's foreign ministry. The fatalities included a baby. The missiles also injured 21 others, most of them women and children. This is not the first time Tel Aviv triggers a warning message from Moscow by engaging in direct and deadly incursion against Syria. During the foreign-backed militancy that began gripping Syria in 2011, before largely subsiding over the past several years, Israel would regularly attack Syria's defenses and targets belonging to its allies, which were helping to contain the violence. Reminding you, this is Russia's perspective transmitted from Radio Havana, Cuba. Last September, they write, a Russian Ilyushin 20 reconnaissance aircraft was shot down and all 15 servicemen on board were killed during Israeli airstrikes in the northwestern Syrian province of Latakia. Moscow said Tel Aviv was fully responsible for the incident as Israeli aircraft were using the Russian plane as a shield at the time, prompting Syrian defenses to bring it down by mistake. So the upshot of that is that Russia is getting increasingly irritated at Israel's shots towards Syria. Now I want to turn to some patriotic information coming in from our very own home country. This from Mother Jones. Correspondent Jonathan M. Katz talked with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez after she had been inside the CBP facility at Hondo Pass, the Border Patrol's dungeon there. And she says that, I mean, it was pretty horrifying. This is a quote. The first CBP facility, the thing that I was just so immediately struck by was how brazenly disrespectful the CBP officers were from the beginning, from the jump. We initially went into a conference room with all the other CHC members. That's, I suppose that stands for Congressional House Committee. We sat down to get initially briefed on the conditions, and a lot of the other members who'd been on several of these tours before started saying they're filibustering, they're trying to draw this beginning portion out as long as possible, so we have as little time as possible with actual communities inside. So then someone brought up the ProPublica piece, and this is where I'm going to stop quoting AOC and explain ProPublica piece brought out that there is a culture of hatred and bigotry within the Border Patrol. And so skipping ahead, I sat there, she said, and folks started speaking up, and I know that Representative Norma Torres was like, are we even safe in here? Are we even safe in your care? And they started getting more and more uncomfortable, and they started getting more and more contentious, and they said, well, you know, our disciplinary standards are to preserve a culture. And I said, well, clearly your disciplinary standards are not sufficient. We're not talking about a couple of people planning this. There's 9,500 current and former officers. They had the audacity to say our disciplinary standards are sufficient. And I said, well, I don't think that's up to you to determine. I think that's up to the United States Congress and our oversight capacity. And they were like basically trying to be like, no, it's not. The amount of fighting back was just astonishing. So members were like, well, they're just trying to filibuster. They're trying to have an argument, so let's get up. And so I stood up and I said, yeah, let's get out of there. So here again, I want to depart from what's written there. Again, you can find that in Mother Jones, and you can find the audio on Mother Jones. And this is reminding me of something. This is the way our senator was treated. He wasn't even allowed in the facility. And these people have been so pumped up by the fascism in the Trump administration that they think they don't have to obey the normal structure of power within the government. They think they're above the government. They think they're above the law. And Trump has given them every opportunity to think that that is true. And so when Merkley was there months ago, they weren't letting him in. And now we have a congressional delegation going inside, and they're giving them grief as if they had the right to. So returning to this transcript, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez says, we stood up and we went to go to the facilities. And by the way, the facility and the way the cells were set up on the inside, you have all of these camps outside. But then on the inside, there's just a handful of these cells with these glass windows on them. And then there's kind of this control center type of situation where there's this elevated platform, then there's glass all over the platform, and on the inside it almost looks like a bridge in Star Trek or something. She says, I'm picturing Minority Report. And she says, it's kind of like that. And there was a screen with surveillance of all the cells inside, and there were officers with computers and stuff, and then there was glass, but on the other side of the glass there was another lower level. It's like a ring outside, and there were cells like that. You can see all the cells almost at once. And speaking for myself, that's been part of American prison design for a while. It's called the Panopticon. So she said, I go up and we're all clustered in the tour in the top area. I'm listening to CBP give this tour. And then I think I see someone had seen it first. It was either like Madeline Dean or Rashida Tlaib or someone saw the screen with the surveillance. It had all the video feeds of all the cells. So I started walking up to the screen with all the surveillance feeds, and since they made us check our phones at the door, I did have some paper and pen and started jotting things down. I was writing everything that I had seen around me. I was counting. I kind of had my pen up. In one of the feeds of the cell, there was one cell that just had a very large amount of people. There were so many people crowded in the cell that people could not sleep in there. There were some people sitting, some people crouched, and I went in and started counting all the people who were in the cell, and then I looked down, and I kid you not, there was literally a CBP officer there with their phone, and they started trying to take a selfie of themselves with me in the background. It wasn't even in the distance. She was 2 feet in front of me, and there was this glass perimeter in front of them. So now, here again, I'm going to depart from that written transcript and explain what's going on here. She was told, obviously, that for some obscure reason, she could not have her phone, meaning she could not take photographs of what was going on in here. You know, and certainly they always say, oh, it's for the protection of the prisoners. And then you have someone, one of the guards, trying to, a CBP officer, she says, with their phone, trying to take a selfie of themselves with her in the background. So obviously, you know, bringing that out to be a lie. That it wasn't necessary. Either wasn't necessary. They just didn't give a damn whether the prisoners got photographed or not. It was very convenient to keep Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from taking photographs. So, returning to that transcript, she says, "It wasn't even in the distance. She was 2 feet in front of me, and there was this glass perimeter in front of them." And that's when all hell broke loose, because I pointed at her as she was holding the phone in front of everybody, the entire congressional delegation, the acting director, all of their supervisors, and I said, look at her, she's taking a selfie right after everything that was just released this morning, which you all indicated you're aware of. And I was like, look at her, she's taking a selfie right now. And then she got startled, as though what she was doing wasn't incredibly obvious. And some of the other officers started laughing. She put her phone away, and then I turned to the supervisors and the CBP and said, it is extremely clear that you have lost all control over the culture here in these facilities. You've lost complete control of the culture. Clearly, they do not respect your authority or your leadership. It's either that or they just think or know that you are not going to do anything and that you are just going to turn the other cheek as soon as we leave if they feel this bold and brazen to do something so egregious in front of their superiors, multiple levels of superiors. And I was like, you all have lost control of this facility, and to tell us that we need to check our phones and then to have this happen, well, you all rules are out the window, end quote. So all I can say is thank God that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez got into the facility, or we wouldn't be even getting this much information, and certainly we wouldn't be getting it at the level of analysis and certainty that we get from having Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on the beam and on the ball. So, 4th of July, 243 years since the slave mongers got together. What do you got to say about that? Proud of it? 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. So, continuing with this little bit, by the way, it's 12 minutes after the top of the hour. You're listening to KBOO Portland live radio, because where else are you going to get live radio on the 4th of July? Where else are you going to get live radio, period? These days, it's pretty hard to find. You dial around. If you have a terrestrial radio at all, you're getting stuff that's being bounced around from somewhere else. They try to save labor costs that way. And I think live radio is pretty cool. I've always enjoyed it. I know you do, because you tune in to KBOO. I hope you're supporting KBOO, and I want to thank all of those of you who have supported us for so many years running. Here we are, 51 years old. In this 243-year-old monstrosity we call the United States. This country, and it's important. It's important to remember that this country is built on genocide and slavery, and it is built on that and never has made that right or even tried. And that's what fuels what I'm describing right now. On another day, I might say, do less with this article and say it's part of the This Week in Whiteness that I do every week, because whiteness and looking the other way and pretending that this nation isn't built on hierarchy and horror and the enforcement of its unjust straight up by torture, pretending, that's what it's all about. And so July 4th is very important today, where we all pretend that it's all about freedom and freedom of speech and all that sort of thing, but it's a lie. We are subjugated, and the power is kept in place by a number of things, but certainly the lie the propaganda keeps us in place, and then the terror, knowing that if I were to go out, myself, even as a white person, if I was a tranny and I was to do something that would irritate a cop, I could be thrown in jail with false charges. How do I know that? It's happened to me. So I'll go to the first caller, and Deanna is on the air, and I know that because the excellent engineer Ray Bodwell knows that I always forget before I get around to go to the line. But hi, Deanna, you're on the air.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you so much for this. I needed something to corroborate my own estimation of what's going on today. Not feeling like an alien right here, everywhere where I live, the people celebrating this day. I personally am wearing black and instructed everyone I know, or I should say, suggested to everyone that I know that they wear black. We should be in mourning for this country, for this democracy that never has been, and for all of the people it has hurt and killed. And yes, there is a bright side. We are working hard, all of us, to get it changed. But I am really in shock and sadness about the number of people who, for whatever their own reasons that they've told themselves, just turn away and don't face this. So thank you. And happy 4th of July.
Happy 4th of July, because we are going to overthrow the hierarchy.
Yes. And thank you for all that you do all the time, Teresa.
Well, thanks. You too.
Okay,
the number to call, 503-231-8187. Live radio, real radio, 503-231-8187. Interested in your opinion. So I'm going to continue with this this transcript. As I was saying, you can hear, and it's wonderful to hear Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's voice, because she's an honest and caring person. You can hear it in her voice. So this transcript isn't good enough, and you should go to Mother Jones and actually hear this. But continuing on what's written down here, the fact that these officers had felt comfortable enough to use sarcasm in these circumstances tells me the whole facility's culture is rotted from the core, and prioritizes and incentivizes dehumanizing behavior. I want to repeat that part. Prioritizes and incentivizes dehumanizing behavior. Thank God for the brain and the heart of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Continuing this, so I put my hand on the glass, she said, and it's cold. And I say, what's the temperature in this room right now? And all these women are huddled up in these sleeping bags. They don't have pillows, nothing. And he says, oh, well, it's cooler there than it is outside. And I said, you're going to let me in this cell right now. You're going to let me in here right now. At the beginning of the tour, they told us we couldn't speak to anybody. But because there was just a huge breach moment, it was like, no, now we're renegotiating everything. And here again, I want to pull back from this, what's written down here, and say, yeah, that's how it works. When you confront power as a group and you keep at them, they will break their protocols, and you'll discover just how false their protocols are. This is what it means. You know, in her case, this is what it means to actually act on her power and act on her knowledge and to be a brave and a strong woman who's standing up for other people. And so I continue with this narrative, and she's talking about how she got into the Yale era, the icebox. She said, this was in the Yale era. And so I went in, and I was joined by Ayanna Pressley and Madeline Dean and Joaquin Castro, and we were in there, and I started talking to all the women. At first, they were just answering very clear questions like, yes, no, how many days have you been there, et cetera. She was speaking Spanish. And eventually, she said, they started saying a little bit more, and all of a sudden, they just started sobbing, sobbing, sobbing. One of them had been separated from her daughter, her one daughter. The other had been separated from her two children. One woman had been in there for 2 months. Most of the women had been there a long time, at least 20 days. And the interviewer asked, where were they from? She said, all of these women were from Cuba. They separated them. There was a cell that had no running water. This is the cell where the woman said she was told earlier today that the toilet water is drinkable. And they also told us the extent to which CBP cleaned up before we got there. So they said that they were kind of officially, the policy was to give them one shower every 15 days. Right. Then that changed 4 days ago. 4 days ago is when we announced that we'd be coming here. 4 days ago was when we reached out to CBP. This is AOC's narrative. that this was the facility we were going to visit, and then they said they get one shower a day, but it's in these kind of tub things. It's hard to suss out exactly what they were describing. It seemed that their showers were inadequate too, like they're not normal showers. And the toilet situation, the interviewer asked, was like that picture where there's like a sink on top of the toilet. And she answered, right, it was like a toilet like the one that was shown, except that top sink had no water. The toilets in CBP cells are often combo toilets, water fountains. We actually got pictures of these toilets through our law set against the Tucson Sector Border Patrol, and people can be forced to drink out of them, even though they're filthy. Here again, I'm going to speak for myself. When I was forced into a filthy cell in custody for yelling at business owners who confronted me with a gun and threatened my job, I was told to drink from the toilet, so I know that cops do these sort of things, especially to people who they consider to be worthless. So you can find that that narrative at Mother Jones. I may go back to that a little bit. I want to talk about climate change as well. But one more quote. So they were told they could drink out of the toilet bowl, and the CBP officer is like, oh no, we have water out here outside the cell, and if they need water they can tell us. But I'll tell you, I was in that cell, I did not see one cup, I did not see one bottle of water, I did not see anything that told me these women had water to drink. Some of the women said that they were able to drink water not from the toilet, but other women told me that they had drunk from the toilet. Let's see, we got a caller suggesting that Monster by Steppenwolf might be the song for today. Yep. Here is July 4th. Aren't you proud? Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Now, I want to talk about climate change, and I'm having a little trouble. Apparently, Google made all of my drafts disappear now. Every week, I do my show by making a draft on Google as if it were an email. This has been convenient for me. Then I print it out, and it's clear to me that I'm going to need to change my technique because apparently it's not reliable anymore. And I suppose it's a cool thing that Google has been reliable for so long, for years and years. More than a decade I've been doing it this way. And by the way, it's getting on to 3 decades I've been here on KBOA. Oh, I think that I started in the late 80s in Austin, Texas on KAZI, but I've been here on KBOA doing Press Watch. And I think I'll have a bit of a party next year for that 30th. Anniversary after I came to town, and Kathleen Stevenson gave me a key to production 2. You don't need a key there now. I keep it as sort of a little trophy. Key to production 2, and allowed me to start sending my program to KAZI and also offering it for here. I think it was 5 or 10 minutes that was added into the radio zine. All right, so we have some information about, I have some information about climate change, and the computer that I'm using, although it is a new computer, is having great difficulty pulling down the text that I have provided to myself. But I've got it here. Okay, so. Oh, I want to add to, before I get to climate change, I want to add to something from Jake Johnson, Common Dreams. In response to photos, news reports, and first-hand reports, accounts of the horrific conditions inside Border Patrol detention centers in Texas, President Donald Trump on Wednesday fired off a tweet blaming migrants themselves for the abuse they are now enduring at the hands of his administration. Quoting his tweet, "If illegal immigrants are unhappy with the conditions in the quickly built or refitted detention centers, just tell them not to come, all problems solved," end quote. Critics slammed the president's tweet as a particularly monstrous example of victim blaming as the administration faces accusations of rampant mistreatment of asylum seekers and immigrant children, many of whom have been separated from their families, etc. Okay, now I want to talk about climate change. It's 23 after the top of the hour. Don't forget that at 9:30, Fight the Empire is coming up. Denise Chow writes on NBC, Alaska could experience record high temperatures in the coming days as a massive heat dome parks over the region, sending temperatures higher than they have ever been recorded in the state. The unusual heat wave is expected to bring temperatures of 87 degrees or higher over the next 5 days, stretching from July 4th through July 8th. Expect record or near record high temperatures today, National Weather Service said Wednesday. And adding to that, Bill McKibben tweeted that the temperature could break the all-time record of 95 degrees. Excuse me, all-time record is 85 degrees. It's expected to break that record in Anchorage. And get a little north of there, you're talking about permafrost that will be exhaling gigantic amounts, gigatons of carbon and of methane into the environment. The warmer it gets, the more gas goes out to make it warmer. That's where we're at historically. We are at the beginning of the worsening of the climate disaster. From Mother Jones, article by Rebecca Lieber, 19 of the 25 Democratic presidential candidates have gone on record in favor of holding a debate devoted to climate change policy. In the past 3 days, four more candidates, including Kamala Harris, have told Mother Jones they would support a climate debate, raising the stakes for the Democratic National Committee, which has so far resisted allowing such an event to take place. Now, I want to stop and comment on that. That's because we have two capitalist parties in the United States, and the Democratic National Committee is very, very concerned that their gigantic donors, the oil corporations, and those dependent on the oil corporations, and the billionaires who suck all the money right out of your payment there at the pump, are furious that they might have a debate. And so I said 19 of the 25. It's actually 20, I believe. I think they may be slightly in error in that one of the other candidates has added in. 20 out of 25 candidates are in favor of holding a debate. And the Democratic Party, let's see, what does that word mean? Democratic. Doesn't want to have the debate, and so they're saying no. So in the Democratic Party, when you have an overwhelming majority that wants something, but the rich people don't want it, guess who wins? So I'll skip ahead, and I'll just leave that there and go to an article. Again, please bear with me right now. I'm having difficulty with my computer, which just seems to be a little bit haywire while I'm trying to bring up. I'm thinking maybe Google is having some general problems today. Anyway, this is from The Guardian. Indian villages lie empty as thousands flee. Now, you were told in various ways that in the distant future, as your children and grandchildren face global warming, that there would be migration as people are unable to live in the heat. Well, it's already happening right now. Sam Ralph in Delhi reports an Indian. He reports Indian villages in India have been evacuated as a historic drought forces families to abandon their homes in search of water. The country has seen extremely high temperatures in recent weeks. On Monday, the capital Delhi saw its highest ever June temperature of 48 degrees centigrade. In Rajasthan, the city of Chiru recently experienced highs of 50.8 degrees centigrade, making it the hottest place on the planet. And if you're wondering what that is Fahrenheit, it's between 110 and 120 degrees. Killing temperatures certainly would kill you, kill me. Further south, he writes, less than 250 miles from the country's commercial capital, Mumbai, village after village lies deserted. Estimates suggest up to 90% of the area's population has fled, leaving the sick and elderly to fend for themselves in the face of a water crisis that shows no sign of abating. The village of Hadarwagi, about 20 miles from Bid in the Maharashtra state, is almost completely deserted. Wells and hand pumps have run dry in the heat wave. The drought, which officials say is worse than the 1972 famine that affected 25 million people across the state, began early in December. By the end of May, Hadarwagi had been deserted with only 10 to 15 families remaining out of a population of more than 2,000. Pardon me. That's all the time that I have. And so I want to tell you that Fight the Empire host Parafagring is looking at America at 243 years old. That's coming up next. At 10, it's going to be the Heather McCoy Show. At 11, Between the Covers, host David Naiman interviews author Ted Chiang about his new work of science fiction stories titled Exhalation. At 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, talking to Liva Ubunifi. Okay, Liwa Ubunifu. I should try Ubunifu. The author of Caged and Locked, My Personal Experience with Circumstantial Depression. Then from noon to 10 p.m., it's our live remote broadcast from the Waterfront I can't even pronounce that now. The Waterfront Blues Festival. Yeah, and we do that every year. And it is one of the times in which people tune into KBOO because they remember we've done it for year after year after year after year. And we are there again today at the Waterfront Blues Festival. So don't forget, you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. We're broadcasting to you on 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia and via the World Wide Web on KBOO.fm to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Storytime with Book Signing with Tanya Lippert on Saturday, July 6th at 1 p.m. at Books Around the Corner in Gresham. Tanya Lippert is releasing the book Goodbye School, where the main character Franny is preparing to move to a new school and saying goodbye to the old school. Again, that's a Storytime and Book Signing with Tanya Lippert on Saturday, July 6th at 1 p.m. at Books Around the Corner, 40 Northwest 2nd Street in Gresham. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Thank you.